Hello and welcome to Talking Tudors, a fortnightly podcast about the ever-fascinating Tudor dynasty. My name is Natalie Gruniger and I'll be your host and guide on this journey through 16th century England. Are you ready to step through the veil of time into the dazzling and dangerous world of the Tudor court? Without further ado, it's time to talk Tudors. Everyone, welcome back to Talking Tudors, Episode 9. I'm your host, Natalie Gruniger, and joining me today to talk all things Elizabeth I is Dr. Estelle Peronc. Dr. Peronc is a lecturer in early modern history at New College of the Humanities and an honorary research fellow within the Centre of the Study of the Renaissance at Warwick University. She received her PhD from University College London in 2016. She has co-edited collections of essays on the political role of queens and has published several essays on Elizabeth I, Henry III of France, and Catherine de Medici. She is the author of the forthcoming book entitled Elizabeth I of England Through Valois Eyes: Power, Representation, and Diplomacy in the Reign of the Queen. My conversation with Estelle straight after this musical break, courtesy of singer-songwriter Carlene. The song Fire and Gold is from Carlene's new album, Elizabeth. Talking Tudors, Estelle. It's so lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. Now, I'd love to begin by you maybe telling us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be interested in the Tudors.
Yeah, sure. So I'm originally from France, and this is where I did my studies. So I did my BA and master degree in France. Mm-hmm. And it all started when I did English studies. I didn't do history. And English studies in France means that you do linguistics, translations, literature, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. history.
Right.
Okay. And my first module in history was about the tutors, and then it will be about the students. And my lecturer at the time had a real passion for the tutors, and I got really interested. I've always loved 16th century France before. Mm-hmm. I've always mm-hmm. been interested by absolutely nothing about British history. And I was just compelled about this great dynasty mm-hmm. that they lasted like, you know, over a century, really. But yet it has such a huge impact
absolutely.
On identity, mm-hmm. On, you know, and we could talk about that. I don't think it is the topic, but I have lots of problems with national identity, what does it mean and everything. But I was just very drawn to that, basically, drawn to the history, and also like to be able like to compare with what I knew mm. of French history. And I was like, oh my God, so it's at the same time that it happened. And then it just didn't make sense really to have just a course on the Tudors, because they didn't just happen in their own bubble.
No, that's right, yeah.
Just happening down, but like, you know, there's world history.
Absolutely.
And yes, that's how it all started, I guess.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. Now, you've spent a lot of time researching the life of Elizabeth I, Queen Elizabeth I. So what actually drew you to her story in particular?
So as I said, like I had like these lectures on the Tudors,
yes.
and week maybe 5 or 6, I can't really remember now, years ago, my lecturer was talking about Elizabeth I. And I remember vividly how fascinated I was that a woman ruled on her own over 44 years. I was like, oh my God, she's absolutely amazing. And then when I put her like, exactly when I compared again to what was happening in France, where women were not really allowed, even Catherine of Medici was not really allowed to rule. And, you know, she was a political advisor and she was queen mother, queen regent, but she was not queen regnant. And how women were, you know, treated at that time. I just found it completely amazing. So I left the course buzzing, and I ran into the first bookshop, you know, that was selling like English books, because I was doing English studies, so I had to read in English.
Yes.
And I bought my first book on Elizabeth I, and I remember it vividly because it's David Starkey's Elizabeth
yes.
as a Princess.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was touched by her story for historical reason, but also for personal reason. It just resonated in me what happened.
Yes.
And I just felt completely drawn to this queen. And I remember writing on a piece of paper, I want to be an expert on Elizabeth I. I knew by that time that I really wanted to be a historian. I didn't know really how to start, you know. When you're in France, you realize that great culture, great history, great language, but you also realize the limitations. And the limitations are that the fact in academia, if you really like, you succeed if you're in France, not what I'm saying, or in any other countries, but if you really want your work to be international, mm-hmm. you're gonna have it in English. So I had to figure out what I was doing, what were the obstacles for me. The obstacle was, the first one was the language.
Yes.
I was okay, good, honestly. I was not really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to work really hard. So I felt like I had to plan. And at the same time, it was so scary to plan this life, what eventually would mean like to leave my home country, to come here, learn a new language, like be completely bilingual, because otherwise there's no point in and face like the negativity of other people. Like but I fell in love with Elizabeth. Fell in love with Catherine of Medici before, and it never left me. So it drove me. It was like a force. There's no other option. It's what I want to do. And she's
absolutely.
So fascinating. She's absolutely amazing. People need to read more about her. She's absolutely incredible.
Absolutely. And everything you've said really resonates with me, because I feel that sort of pull and that draw with Anne Boleyn. And people often ask me, Oh, an Australian with Uruguayan parents. Why do you feel drawn to, you know, so I get it. It's sometimes difficult to explain and there are challenges along the way. Absolutely. Estelle, I'd love to talk. Yeah, I'd love to talk now about your upcoming book. This is so exciting. Elizabeth I of England Through Valois Eyes, Power, Representation and Diplomacy in the Reign of the Queen, 1558 to 1588. Tell us about this book. This is so, so exciting.
So I couldn't be more proud or happy. So this book comes from my PhD thesis. So I would like to make that point first. So during my PhD, I looked at that topic,
yes.
But I only looked from 1568 to 1588. And okay. When I decided to turn my thesis into a book, I decided to expand my research.
Okay.
It meant doing more research in archives, writing a total new chapter, and updating and working more on the others. So I have to say that first, because I really feel like it's not just my thesis. There's more to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what it is about? It is about that. So as I said, I had this huge passion, at least I still do, and I was, how am I going to fit in? Because when you're an academic, you have to think quite, not quickly, actually, it's not true. Take your time and talk to people if you're interested in doing that, or even if you're not an academic, just a historian, you know, just take your time, but think how you fit in the historiography. And I felt, okay, I have one strength, really, is my knowledge of French history, mm-hmm. and it's my language. So I should use it, really, because I can go through, French, like as easy obviously as English,
yes,
in quick time. So I felt like, okay, that's a good point, right? That's something where I need to start. And then I was thinking, everything you read on almost when you read on Elizabeth, it's about how she was perceived by the English.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about representations, Gloriana, the Virgin Queen. You know, it's all about this. And I was, and then I read two articles. I read one article about the Venetian ambassadors. And I read one chapter on the Moroccan ambassador's morals and how they perceived her. I thought, that's it. There's nothing of the French. And the French are like, they're one of the closest neighbors. And
absolutely.
I was like, oh, that's okay. So then I started, and my book is how the French monarchs and ambassadors perceived Elizabeth. And how, and then it tells us so much about the Anglo-French relations, the diplomacy, and obviously you could argue that there's the political language, but in the French ambassador's reports, you have much more than, and I truly believe that, like having read hundreds, not thousands of letters, it's really, really some personal judgment, some personal notes of something they see that they should have seen, or they just, if they, you know, some of them, you know, they were human beings.
Absolutely.
You get on with someone and somehow you absolutely don't, and we know that. And some ambassadors, I think, really liked her, really liked her personality. She depicted a kind of cheeky, sassy woman, but also really recognized her strength and the fact that she was probably more king than queen, even if the language was still using, I'm not saying that they called her a king, but I'm saying, like, look at my book, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yes, I will. I can't wait.
So I did that. And the way I did it, so it's 1558, 1588. You don't go through all the years during that period. What you have is like one chapter, it's chronological, but one chapter for a particular event. So we start with the first chapter, 1558, 1565. And I chose that because, so she became queen, but also then how it changed in France with, you know, Catherine of Medici becoming regent. And so I thought it was a very interesting period. And then losing that regency in 1563. And Mary Queen of Scots going back to Scotland. This, I really wanted to have this kind of long chapter. The second chapter is 1568, 1570, and it's when basically Mary Queen of Scots fled Scotland to England. Then it's 1570 to 74, is the massacre of this St. Bartholomew's massacre, and the impact, the 2 years impact after it. And then we have 1578, 1581, the last, marriage negotiations between Anjou and Elizabeth. And then it's an amazing chapter, I really love it, 1584, 1588, the mess that existed in France and England. Absolutely amazing. Thrilling as well, because I hope I manage, because it's so much, you know, so much knowledge trying to
yes.
be on, to be as precise and concise as possible. But it's to see the downfall of Mary Queen of Scots, but also explaining what's happening in France, and this unexpected friendship between Henry III and Elizabeth I. Oh, friendship, I call it friendship, but I would say yes, it's a friendship.
Okay. Oh, it sounds amazing, and I can just, your passion is just absolutely coming through. I can really get a sense of that, so it's really exciting. I can't wait to read that. I want to know, you mentioned Henry III. I want to know a little bit more about the letters that you actually, I know you uncovered some letters during your research, and what do these letters, I know it's hard in a short time, but what do they tell us about Elizabeth's influence over European politics? I must vary, obviously, at the time, but what do they tell us?
Okay, so to explain really, so in my research, what was really important was to look at what the French said. So I looked at French letters. So I looked at the ambassadors, as I said, but also what the kings, so Charles IX and Henry III. And actually, one of the strengths of my book is that really is to show that Charles IX and Henry III were really political actors. It was not just their mother, Catherine of Medici, and actually she even got a seat back with Henry III. Like she was very involved, but she had to stop being so involved.
Right.
But then I realized, well, going through those letters, that I had to look at what Elizabeth said as well. Because I believe that Elizabeth influenced the ways in which they were seeing her, in her own letters, in her own words, what she was saying. It was quite difficult to put even, you know, you just like in a very short time, but also just in one book to have this. So sometimes in some chapters I had to leave a voice, and then but for 1584, 1588, I really have her voice. And as you said, I uncovered letters where, honestly, it was absolutely amazing. And it's not like they were not there. So I want to make sure when someone said they uncovered letters, some of the letters were not in the archives. Of course, there were.
Mm-hmm.
It's some reasons, maybe because they were in French, because they were not well written. God knows, people just overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
Or also because the third people didn't really see the interest in him sometimes, so, and especially from an Anglo perspective, I think that as, and actually he has some, he should be more, of political scenes and how we see history. But anyway, so when I looked at those letters, it's when I realized that Elizabeth was very much we've always known that she was involved in European politics. Mm-hmm. We all knew that she helped Huguenots. We all knew that she helped the Protestants in the Netherlands, Spanish Netherlands, and she was very much involved in that. And actually, I would like to make a point about that. It really shows that England, even in 16th century, cared about their European neighbours.
Mm. Good point. Good point.
Yeah, because I've heard so many people, Brexiters, talking about how in the Tudors they were so English and seeing this English identity. That is absolutely bullshit.
Mm.
They were very well aware that they needed to be Europeans, and that is why Elizabeth built this huge empire. That she started to build this huge empire because she knew it was about obviously competition, because we were always competing in history. It's our history with our European neighbors, but there's also friendship, there's also alliances, there's also interest in one another. Elizabeth would never leave European Union without a good deal. I'm sorry to say, and she made sure that there was peace in Europe. She avoided war at all costs to make sure that peaceful, good trade deals. Trade deals were extremely important for her, and because she knew it was really important for her people, for England, and for the role they were going to play. So that's what I'm trying to say. And so when I was looking at these letters, I realized that Elizabeth was not just a defender of Protestants. She just had a massive interest in what was going on in other countries and for different reasons. And she wrote to Henry III, telling him that the real enemies were the Guises. The Guises were the family of Mary Queen of Scots. Ultra-Catholic, ultra Auntie Elizabeth.
Mm.
They were trying to get the power in France, and Elizabeth saw that right away, and she told him, she wrote to him, Henri de Navarre, so the Protestant Huguenot leader, is not your enemy. He doesn't want the throne when you're on it. Mm-hmm. He wants to be there to the throne because it's a, you know, blood, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, that's it. But not when you're on the throne. So she knew that, and she made that. It's so interesting that she made that point, because it's almost like she saw what was going to happen. Henry III got, Paris got besieged in May 1588 by the Guises and the Catholic League. And she wrote all of this in 1586. She keeps writing.
Interesting, she keeps,
And then she's very scared when she tells Henry, like, there's another letter where she tells Henry in 1588, you know, I don't really have the words, like, in me, oh my God.
Yeah.
You belong to the light.
Wow.
Stop shadow. You have to go back in the light.
Yeah.
And I love that she said that, because she knew how to rule, and she was politically, she was absolutely smart. Like, she had a very, very strong and good understanding of what was happening.
Yeah.
She knew the sisters. She knew how to avoid them more. Then we can, you know, argue that she didn't, but I think she did. And so with Henry III, she's really playing this kind of like secret advisor. That's why I'm calling it protected friendship, because he listens to her.
Wow.
He listens to her, but it's too late. So he's going to shift alliances.
Mm.
He's going to stop being with the Catholic League, and he's going to, against the Huguenots, and he's going to shift his alliance and be with the Huguenots. He made bad decisions again, and it's too late for her to tell him.
Mm.
But how amazing to have this Protestant English queen advising Henry III was a strong Catholic.
Absolutely.
But both of them knew, if you want to rule, you have to be the king or queen of all people.
Wow.
And that's really a very fascinating story between the two.
Yes, you've given me goosebumps. That's amazing. And it's a side we don't often hear. Like, we don't hear much about that. So that's so wonderful to bring that now to the public. That's really fantastic. I can't wait to read more and find out more. And she's obviously a woman that had great foresight as well. She could obviously see the pieces, and that's amazing, isn't it?
I think because of the services of Walsingham, she was very well aware of what was going on, and she was great. She had great knowledge. Also, I think that she played she was very good. We know that she was very good at delaying, you know, answers, but it's just absolutely amazing how Henry III and Elizabeth have lots in common, actually.
Amazing, amazing. All right, so just changing the subject a little bit, Estelle, I want to know what you think about the nature of Elizabeth's relationship with Robert Dudley, Earl of Leicester. Was he her great love? What you've come to know, was he her great love? What was going on there?
So for me, there's no doubt that he was probably the love of her life.
Right.
I think there's, you know, there's no smoke without fire.
Yeah.
Even in the French ambassador's report, so I didn't really tackle that in my research, because it was not really one, you know.
Yeah, not what you're writing.
At the time, it's not what I wanted to write.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no doubt that they reported a kind of relationship, like a closeness. But now, having said that, I think Elizabeth and Robert probably fell in love when they were young.
Mm-hmm.
I think Elizabeth loved power more than she loved Robert Dudley, and I think that Robert loved power as well more than he loved her.
Mm.
I think he really saw himself potentially for years as King of England, but it didn't mean, you know, he betrayed her in so many ways. Like, it's actually an amazing love story when you think about it, where there's so many obstacles, and then he goes with Lettuce Nollis. I mean, can't stand that woman. And he couldn't hurt her more than that. But at the same time, she probably hurt him when she was like, there's no, you know, no one's going to be with me right now. You see what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
It's kind of like, you know, the best TV shows we have sometimes on love stories when it never
yes.
really happens.
Yeah, never matches. Never.
It's really that.
Oh, wow.
But at the end, until the end, they still have, like, even if there are some years when they don't talk, he's, like, removed from court, and, you know, he fell out of favor, right? But in so many ways, they were still close friends, and there was, like, affection and deep, you know, feelings.
Yeah.
You can't deny it.
I mean,
No, she kept his last
Oh,
letter.
that letter, that is just, oh my goodness.
So obviously there was something. Obviously.
Absolutely.
Not that she likes the men, I believe that because of life, right? But he was number one.
No, I think so. I agree with you. Now, there are many misconceptions and myths surrounding Elizabeth, some really crazy ones out there. What's one that you've found to be particularly persistent?
That's okay. You're right. There's a lot. I think I'm going to tackle the one that Elizabeth was a feminist.
Okay, yep.
Bullshit. That just because the concept really didn't exist at that
Well,
time.
exactly, that's right. That's one problem.
And so when people like, oh, she was this kind of like very, she was a strong woman, yes, but she said it clearly. I'm no ordinary woman. I'm an extraordinary woman. That is why I can rule. That is why I'm queen, and that is why I'm this and this and this. So when someone says something like that, it obviously means that they're not here to promote women's rights. You see, she didn't see it as such.
No.
Not that she said that women could rule. Yeah, for her, because of her, because of who she was. And probably she felt. I mean, there's lots of respect in Elizabeth and Catherine Millie. I like to write a book on those two women as well, relationship, because it's absolutely fascinating too. It's not more fascinating than with Henry III, but at some point she tells Catherine, she's very clear, and she tells her, we're not the same. You're not a daughter of a king, so know your place, know my place. But at the same time, she has lots of respect for her. So Elizabeth as a feminist, no, it's bullshit. But that we can learn today from her. And push the ideals of feminism and equality. I truly, strongly believe in that. Yes, we should. We should use any examples, any icon that we can have. But let's not, it's our perspective, it's our ways of, it's a present looking at the past, and
Absolutely.
more than the past really giving us something. Elizabeth didn't give us feminism, for example.
Okay, absolutely. And she's so inspiring. Absolutely inspiring. Could you sum up for us the woman that you've come to know in your research, Elizabeth, that is? Could you give us a little summary of what was she like? What were her main traits as you've come to know her?
Well, I'm gonna try. It's really weird. So because like I read so many letters from the French, but before that I did my master's degree and I looked at all her speeches and her letters, her poems, her prayers. It's someone, well, from what I've read,
Yes.
and it's like, I sometimes I think I told my students that I felt like sometimes it was like she was almost like my best friend. I know that's a bit sad, but I know her. I feel like I know her so well, or like that I know Henry III so well because I've read so many of their letters. And so Elizabeth for me, the woman in the archives that I researched, someone really lonely, someone who made sacrifices to get where she wanted to get, someone who had passion and fire in her, someone who didn't want to suffer again. I think we have to look at what happened to her when she was a child and when she was a teenager, and she was that shit. Became queen. She has power, and that power is to give her security. But she's someone with great compassion. She's someone who very smart and knows how to play men against men and how to get her way through this male world. She's sassy. She's impulsive, and I love it. When people are like, "Oh, but you like her?" Sometimes she really lost her mind. I love it. I love her most. Yes, she slapped people. I would have slapped people. Honestly, sometimes I was reading a French ambassador's report, and I was like, "You didn't get slapped." I was like, "You're so lucky because I would have had." She's so human. So she screams and but all the shit that she has to face. So when people know what to do, get married, blah blah blah, and at the same time, she absolutely amazing because when she gives speeches, said, "I'm just a woman and I'm not really good with rhetoric." But and then she gives this amazing speech, really well written, really well, the rhetoric is spot on, and at the end she doesn't give any answer. You won't have
Amazing.
any answer. you won't have any. And the same with the French. Oh, I will marry you. I won't marry you. I will marry you. I've changed my mind. I'm not sure. I need to see you. Are you handsome enough? I love that. I'm not sure he's handsome enough. Oh. I love him. I'm like, yeah, you go, girl. Why would you want to get married to someone you're not attracted to? I love her.
Yeah.
Honestly, I love the way she was so human. But yeah, she was so lonely. She had a burden. And, you know, there's a poem that she wrote, allegedly that she wrote. I think she wrote it. There's two, actually. When I was fair and young. And basically, it's sorry for my
cat. That's okay.
When I was fair and young, and everyone was, like, asking her to get married, and she said no. And at the end, she's just alone. Mm. And here we have a glimpse into the personal feelings of a queen who was in the end just a woman.
Mm.
And who made choices that she believed right for her country, for herself. And I love also when she said that, you know, when everyone is pressuring her to marry and to have a child of her own. And she said, "It doesn't, having a child of my own doesn't mean that he's going to be a good ruler."
No.
And she's the only one who would say that bluntly and say, yeah, I've never seen Catherine or anyone else saying that.
No.
It's their sovereign, they're going to be great. And she's like, actually, it might be a shit, right? Do you really want, you know, who knows? Because he's my kid, that he's going to be amazing. Thank God someone is fucking lucid. And I love that about her. I love I love that you can relate to her. I love that she was a kind person.
Hmm.
And she was someone who had lots of cars, and she was someone who suffered so much.
Yeah.
But in the end, I'm getting emotional here.
No, that's okay.
She gets so, she empowered herself.
Mm.
But it was a burden.
Yeah.
It was a burden. In the end, she completely ends her life alone.
Yeah.
And I think it's even harder sometimes for women, because we know we always talk about the mask of youth of Elizabeth, but she didn't really have voice, really. She had to be this strong. And I don't think people say it's about vanity, maybe. I would say also it's about, you know, when you're young, you're strong.
Mm.
And she didn't want to be depicted as, you know, an old spinster, because it was not the strong monarchy, you know, that she built, really. So I think there's more than vanity. When we talk about Elizabeth, there's more that she was absolutely brilliant. She was, and I will really, you know, encourage anyone to read her her personal prayers, personal poems. Absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. Mm. Yeah. Mm. I love it.
Extraordinary woman. It's amazing that she even made, sometimes I just don't even understand how she got to the throne safely in one piece. Like, I just... extraordinary. Her whole story is extraordinary. Yeah,
she was not born to power.
Mm.
Okay, I'm making that point because
yes, I know. I've seen a certain ad for a mirror.
Exactly, and I was like, oh my god, born to power? No, 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 never happened.
Yeah.
She should not have ruled.
No, yeah. It's
you know, she should not have ruled, and maybe she would have had more peaceful and happier life.
Perhaps.
She would not have given us, you know, this strength. I think Elizabeth is an example of strength and courage.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
All of us, any background.
Mm, yes, so, I agree. Now, was she, from what you've come to know, did she share that streak of paranoia, suspicion that the Tudor monarchs tended to have? Was she also like that?
I guess yes and no. She was very cautious, and she had people to be suspicious and paranoid. You know, for her, like Walsingham was really on top of it. They were so scared of her. I think they were more scared than she was for her life. So I would say yes and no. I would say she was very well aware that there were lots of dangers for her, but I would say that she was not too crazy in that.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. And I have to ask the question that I think is on everyone's lips when it comes to the last Tudor monarch. Virgin Queen Estelle, yay or nay?
Nay.
No?
First of all, okay, there's lots of debates on that.
Of course.
I want to put that there's a huge debate among historians who have worked Elizabeth like for 40, 50, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's one point. Because it's not just, you know, it's not just, do you have an opinion, really? It's like, and for me, there's two, like, there's a few things.
Yep.
The first one is that when she was a princess, she lived with Catherine Parr and her husband, Thomas Seymour.
Yes.
We have reports of Thomas Seymour leaving the bedroom, the Elizabeth bedroom, early mornings, you know, with Elizabeth gowns, nightgowns in pieces. Mm. What is to be a virgin? Are we just talking about the fact, you see what I mean? Like, are we just
yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I don't know really what happened there. Mm. I believe that why a man would just stop with sexual assault when he has access to her all the time. Mm. She has no protection. That is why I cannot forgive Catherine Parr. Catherine Parr was great until that time when she didn't defend a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Amazing.
I lose respect for that woman. Mm. When you see your husband, you know, giggling, like having an appropriate kind of...
Yes, I've read the accounts. It's quite disturbing, isn't it?
Yes, it really is. Mm. It really is. It absolutely. So now imagine that Elizabeth was, something happened to her. Mm. Now we talked about Robert Dudley. Do we really think that love can be platonic for, I don't know, 4 years?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Also, I have not finished some research on that, but I'm really interested in that particular topic. And mm-hmm. I looked at who was her physicians. Mm-hmm. And we have Robert Hook, I hope I pronounced it right, who was the last physician of Henry VIII and Catherine Parr, who was then the physician of Edward VI. I don't think it was for Mary. And then she appointed him again at the beginning of the reign. Now, I found it really hard to find the reports or, you know, how she was. And there's only one book written. Oh, my God, I forgot the name. But anyway, there's one book on the physicians from the Tudor and Stuart period. And it doesn't really say much. Mm. But it says something very interesting. All the other surgeons, all the other physicians in the reign of Elizabeth, their patron was Robert Dudley.
That is very interesting.
I'm like, okay.
Goodness.
Is it interesting that the love of a life, or the person we think that had a very close relationship, the French ambassador saw him like leaving also early in the morning in the private chamber.
Yeah.
And we saw that he was the patron of the royal physicians.
Huh. Mm. Interesting. Very interesting.
Interesting. Absolutely amazing. So I think, but now I would like to say, I think it doesn't matter.
Mm. Yeah.
Virgin Queen, also, I have to make another point. The Virgin Queen propaganda, the Virgin Queen image was created in 1580.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 1580.
Yeah, 1580.
Wow. Okay.
It wasn't created before. Mm. It was to put an end to the marriage negotiations with Anjou.
Uh-huh, yep.
It was created because Elizabeth was not getting any younger.
No.
And that marriage negotiations, you know, at some point with anyone was going to stop. And so they had, like, the government had to create this kind of pure and strong image. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't created before. Mm. That we thought she was virgin because, like, we, you know, with the marriage negotiations, yes. But even in the marriage negotiations, I mean, like, there's lots of ambassadors' reports telling Catherine, are you sure you want one of your sons marrying Elizabeth? I just saw Robert Dudley leaving the room, in the, you know, very early in the morning.
Wow.
And she was like, yes, I want my son to be king of England, you know. But in the end, I think it didn't really matter.
Right, yes, I see what you're saying.
It's absolutely no. So when you take into consideration what happened when she was young, mm-hmm. what it is to be a virgin, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, she had sex. I don't know what kind of sex she had. She definitely had sex. Mm. Consent or not, right? She was raped. I think she was sexually assaulted. Yeah, no doubt she was sexually assaulted. She was. No one gave her giggles, like, bullshit.
Yeah.
So I think that if you take all of this into consideration, the fact that then Robert Dudley was the patron of a royal physicians, very interesting. That is very
interesting.
Hot. I'm going to dig and I'm going to try to find the reports of the royal physician. But I'm almost thinking that if there was not something, when I say wrong, you see what I mean, like that she could not have children. And that is why she never married, because she said, I will only marry, the only point of marrying is to have children. Mm. That when she says that, she's basically saying, I don't think I can. Yeah. Why would I put... So So I think there's that. Obviously, she was not a man. Fucking bullshit as well.
Yes, that's the one I was saying. Some crazy, crazy things out there.
Oh, absolutely crazy. No, she was not a man. She was a woman. Absolutely. People need to get a life when they start thinking that, you know. And then when you take into consideration that the Virgin Queen was not, you know, didn't the term and everything didn't appear before 1588, then you're like, it's just propaganda. It's just to lead to then Gloriana in 1588. And onwards.
Yes.
And the Fairy Queen, this kind of pure, strong, almost supernatural woman ruling England. But in the end, she was a woman. In the end, she had many, like, honestly, she had many courtiers. I think she would. And in that sense, she was really much a king. For me, she's King of England.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you can see all her courtiers and favorites as just mistresses, or not mistresses, but favorites. Like when she played with them. Why not? You know, why would she have stopped herself?
Yeah. Fantastic. Oh gosh, this is such, I'm so loving this conversation, Estelle. Thank you. It's almost time for us to end our conversation. So it's time to play a little game of 10 to go. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. All right. Number one, what do you do to recharge?
Do I recharge?
Do you recharge?
What do I do? Oh yes, I do it at Christmas where I sleep. I sleep like around 16 hours a day. Okay. I become a panda. What's the animal?
A bear. I like panda. That's cute.
What I do for recharge, okay, it sounds really pathetic. I wake up, I have breakfast, I sleep again, I have my lunch, I sleep again, I have dinner, and I sleep. And I do that for three, 4 days.
So you're like hibernating. You're like hibernating.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Excellent. Yeah, I like that. let's see. What song? Do you have a song that instantly lifts your mood? So if you're feeling a bit down, can you play something that gives you a bit of a boost?
Yeah, I do. Fleetwood Mac. Thrown Down.
Oh, I love Fleetwood Mac. Good choice. I'm a bit of an association game here. What's the first word that comes to mind when I say Henry VIII?
Bastard.
All right. Yep. Go with that. No, that's fine. You have to be honest in these association games. What is your favorite portrayal of Elizabeth I in film? Do you like any of them? Do you have a favorite?
I'll go with Kate Blanchett's Elizabeth.
Okay, yeah, I quite liked that. Describe your ideal Saturday night.
Oh my God, I'm going to sound boring.
That's what everyone's been saying.
Honestly, it would be like reading a nice book, being warm on a nice sofa or armchair, and probably with my two cats around me.
That sounds good. Yeah, that sounds good to me. What books are currently on your desk or your bedside table? What's something you're reading at the moment?
So there's a thriller of Jussi Adler Olsen. So he's a Danish author. Absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Start with Mercy. You will love it. Okay. I highly recommend it. Please do it. There's Bones of Blood of Carolyn Dodds Pennock.
Okay.
It's the Aztec culture. It's an amazing, amazing, amazing book. I absolutely love it. And there's a book on Catherine of Medici, but I can't remember the author.
That's okay. All right. That's a good selection. Now, if you could travel back, let's just pretend that we can travel back to see one event in Tudor history, or one day, or one event, or what would it be for you?
When Elizabeth was told that she was going to become Queen of England.
Oh, yes. I would love to see her too.
I would have loved to see her. Like,
me too, yes. What a moment. Perfect. Gosh.
Yeah.
Sounds good. What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given, or one of the great piece of advice that you've been given in your life?
Be true to yourself.
Yeah, beautiful.
And never change. And if you're true to yourself, and if you have a dream, pursue it, and it will happen. It will happen because it's you. Mm-hmm. It will happen. And it doesn't matter if people don't like you. It doesn't matter if they criticize you, because your people, you will find your people. If you stay true to yourself and you don't change yourself and you don't try to please everyone, you'll find your people, and they'll accept you for who you are. So, yeah, really stay true to yourself.
Yeah, that's beautiful. What is your drink of choice? If we were going out for a drink, what would you be ordering? Alcoholic, by the way, Estelle.
a glass of red wine.
Nice.
Gin and tonic.
Yeah.
And in the summer, like a Pimm's.
Beautiful. I like all that. Do you have a go-to karaoke song? Do you do any karaoke?
Oh, God, you wouldn't want me to. Oh, my God, I sing so badly. No, I don't do that at all. I'm absolutely a nun. I think I sing well. I mean, it's like a screaming cat.
All right, we better keep you off the karaoke stage then. All right, fabulous. And last question is your Tudor takeaway. But do you have a Tudor takeaway for us, Estelle?
Have to.
Yes, good. Yes.
If you are interested in Elizabeth I,
yes,
I highly advise you to read Carol Levin's book, Heart and Stomach of a King.
Okay.
It's the best book that I've ever read on Elizabeth I. It's the one that got me completely inspired to pursue, this and to pursue my research on Elizabeth. And then I would say that in 2020, I think, there's going to be an exhibition at the British Library on Elizabeth and Mary Stuart.
Oh.
It's going to be absolutely amazing.
Okay, so, I think I'm going to have to book that trip in so I can come and see it. 2020, that gives me time. That's good. I love that. Exactly. Oh, that's one.
Save money and then to come.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. We've got time to save up. This has been so fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm really inspired by your passion and your knowledge and I've loved it. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you so much. It was so nice. Very, very nice to meet you and to talk to you and to share my passion. It means so much to me. Thank you.
Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Talking Tudors. Thank you so much for listening. If you have any comments or suggestions or just want to say hi, please get in touch with me via my website, www.onthetudortrail.com, where you will also find show notes for today's episode. If you've enjoyed the show, please share the podcast with friends and family and click on the all-important follow button so you'll never miss an episode. I also invite you to join our Talking Tudors podcast group on Facebook, where you can interact with other Tudor history lovers and hear all the behind-the-scenes news. It's time now for us to re-enter the modern world. As always, I look forward to talking Tudors with you again very soon.